I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, you know, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know, I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
So welcome back to another episode of the Basketball and Barbells podcast. Today we have Hannah Huseman, who is a mental performance and skills coach who currently works with the Philadelphia Phillies. Hannah has also had previous stops with the Pittsburgh Pirates and Sports Strata. Hannah also travels for speaking engagements on how training your mental skills can help any performer. And she has also worked with Major League Baseball players, business executives, actors, and athletes of all ages. So this episode was really important to me, just kind of piggybacking off last episode as far as mental health. Just want to get an expert in who really does focus more so on the mental performance side of, you know, just everyday life and then, you know, different areas of expertise. So Hannah, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, Xavier, thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I'd like to start off with, you know, basically kind of like pulling the curtain back for all my guests. So if you could, like, kind of what was it like kind of growing up? Because I've looked at your resume, so I kind of know a little bit ins and outs. But, you know, kind of like getting into performance, like sports that you played and what really kind of pushed you into getting in the industry that you're in now?
Yeah, so I had your pretty typical athletic growing up regime, I guess you would say. I played every sport I could play. and I had a younger brother who we're about 2 years apart. So we were pretty close and incredibly competitive. So we really, really played all the sports. And I knew from a very young age that that was my all-time favorite thing in the whole wide world to do, was to play sports and to compete and push myself physically. And so my two main sports growing up were softball and basketball. And I actually went to the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, which is a small Division I school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and actually played basketball my freshman year. And then, went through a lot. I was the token 3-point shooter. That was me. and I was pretty fast back in the day. But so I played basketball my freshman year, and then I ended up actually switching sports and finished my college career playing softball. So I played softball for 3 years, kind of a unique path, but definitely think that those challenges and hardships and good things, all of that kind of created who I am today. So I literally do not regret one part of that, but I had my undergrad was in exercise science, because I knew, again, I knew I wanted to stay involved in sport. That's what I was most passionate about and what really got me going in life. And I just didn't know to what capacity I was going to do that in. And I thought, you know, maybe it was coaching, maybe it was being a strength and conditioning coach. And so I did a couple internships like that. And just again, nothing was yes, this is what you are meant to be doing. And just to go back a step, my mom actually has her master's in clinical psychology. And we always grew up having really deep conversations and really supportive conversations. And I've always kind of been the person that everybody kind of tells their business to, whether I am really, really close friends with them or whether I barely know them. Somehow it was just always kind of gravitated towards me and always created those conversations. And so my mom was why don't you look into psychology? And I was the last thing I want to do is work with just the general population. I want to work with whether it's an athlete or just highly competitive, highly motivated people and performers. And so then I found this thing called sports psychology and kind of combining both of those worlds, and took a class in my undergrad. So it was my last semester of my senior year. I think I took a intro to sports psychology class, and I was what the heck is this? And why have I never heard of this? And why did I not get to use this in my college career? And so from that point forward, I just was I got to know everything I can about sports psychology, and started doing some research and found a lot of really good grad school programs to get your master's in sports psychology, and ended up going right down the road about an hour and a half to the University of Tennessee up in Knoxville, and got my master's in sports psychology and motor behavior, which is just a really fancy way of saying how the mind and the body work together to produce optimal performance. So like you said, like mental skills and mental performance, which I think it's super important to differentiate. If you just did a podcast on mental health, the differences between mental health and mental performance, right? So, you know, mental health can be anything from eating disorders to anxiety to depression to suicidality, et cetera, et cetera. And that is not necessarily what I deal with. So I deal with specifically mental performance. So basically anything on the field, such as confidence, resiliency, composure, enjoyment, motivation, all of those things is specifically what I work on. So that's why my title isn't a psychologist, it's a coach, a mental skills coach or a mental performance coach. You know, it doesn't really matter what you say, but I'm a coach. I'm just like a hitting coach, a shooting coach, a conditioning coach, a strength coach. But instead of focusing on the physical aspects of your game, we're focusing solely on the mental aspects of your game and working on those things that are going to make you the best player possible, but on the mental side of things instead of only focusing on the physical side of things. So that was really fun. And then I did a couple internships while I was in grad school. And then my first internship out was with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So kind of got going into the baseball world a little bit. And like you said, I worked for Sports Strata, which was a private practice up in New York City. So up and moved to New York City when I was 25 for a year and a half by myself. Didn't know anybody. It was crazy, but awesome. and was there for a year and a half. And now I am about to start year number three doing the same kind of work, but with the Philadelphia Phillies now. So that's kind of my background of how I got to where I am.
Yeah, and awesome. Like, and it's funny, actually, like kind of taking it back a little bit. You said you played basketball. Like, I literally looked it up as soon as you said that. I'm like, oh wow, I didn't even see that. And like that's so funny. Like the irony is, like, you know, like you're working with the Phillies and it's like you're on the Basketball and Barbells podcast and you're like, yeah, I play basketball. He's like, all right, yep. Cool. It was meant to be.
Believe it. I did.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Exactly. So one thing I just wanted to touch on a little bit is, like, you actually you know, you did the internship of strength and conditioning, which is, you know, it's like funny in my opinion, because, you know, you weren't like, oh, like I'm going to stick as a strength and conditioning coach. Cause most interns, like strength and conditioning, they're just like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I'm just passionate about like lifting, like, you know, getting heavy numbers or things like that. But you were just kind of necessarily like, you know, I want to help, you know, athletes. I want to be around sports. And it wasn't an immediate yes for you. Like, oh, I want to do this. So, like, you were able to step away from that. And so, like, to me, like, that's, I love that, because I think there's a ton of times where people just get in strength conditioning and they don't necessarily love it. And down the line, like, they fall out of it because of that. So really just like commend you for that. Just having like that opportunity, like, to know yourself.
Yeah. And I'm like a very, very passionate person and enthusiastic person. And I know pretty quickly if I'm passionate about something or if I'm not. And I just like, I love, don't get me wrong, I love working out. I love everything about strength and conditioning, but like just teaching it and doing it every day was just not what was really getting me going. And I think kind of what you're alluding to is a really good point too, is, you know, you do internships and you do opportunities and sometimes they're not perfect and sometimes you don't like it. And that's the point of them, is to realize, like, you may learn more from an internship or a job opportunity that you don't like than one that you absolutely love and are really, really good at. I think all of that is a stepping stone to where you get to, where you eventually want to be. I talk a lot about like lily pads, right? Everybody wants to be on the biggest pond that they can get to, but you don't realize that you don't just start there. You don't just, like, the first opportunity you get, very rarely is that the pond you want to end up on. And so it's like, you got to go from lily pad to lily pad. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so good. Some of them are pretty. Some of them are pretty ugly, right? But eventually you keep going, you keep moving forward, and you take the good, you take the bad, and you grow from both of those experiences. And you realize, okay, maybe this is kind of the direction I want to go. Maybe this isn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. Like, I think those experiences are invaluable to, on your journey to wherever you want to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's funny. I always tell people, like, hey, Andrew Hootie says it too. Like, you know, you want to fail every day because you learn a lot more from your failures than you do from your successes. And I think that was like also a driving force in my career. And just like anyone who's in a position, you know, you with the Phillies or anyone else like in positions that, you know, some other people might say, oh, that's ideal. But it's like, okay, well, there's a lot that went into this. It wasn't like you graduated and all of a sudden the Phillies are like, all right, here's your first opportunity. Like, you'll be with us for the rest of your life. Like, no, right. there's going to be, you know, positions that you get that maybe you like, maybe you don't like it. There are things going on like that, you know, you may not know. Maybe you don't realize some of the things that go into that specific job. And it helps you. It helps you, like, navigate your way through your life and through the world. So, no, I love the fact that you said that. It's like you, like, understand that, okay, very passionate. And I'm the same way. So if there's something that someone's like, hey, you want to do this? And I'm like, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I know it's just, for me, it's just going to be kind of like a waste of time because I'm not going to put my all into it or really want to put my all into it.
Yeah.
And so when I get the opportunity where I'm like, heck yeah, then all right, then I'm jumping into it. But
yeah,
no, I definitely agree. I always say, like, it's either a 1 or it's a 10. If you're on either, if you're in between that, then you probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe you try it and then you realize, maybe beforehand you don't even know you're a 1 or a 10 and you try it and then you realize that's not for you and then you just finish it and go your separate way. Like, that's okay. Exactly. That's not a good thing or a bad thing. That's still a learning step. Like, you still learned something from that. And chances are that no matter what lily pads you were on, somehow, some way, they're probably going to connect to the overarching big pond you want to get to. Like, there's still strength and conditioning terms that I use when I'm working with players and they're like, mm-hmm. Oh shoot, you know what a deadlift is? And I'm like, what? Of course I do. You know? Like, some people may not, you know? And right. So it's like, you never know even then, like the roads that you think you went on that was a waste of time or the wrong decision could potentially, most likely, if you choose to find it, can help you in the greater picture of wherever you're trying to get to. Like, I'm almost going to guarantee that.
Right. And honestly, like, just you saying that, so, like, having that background strength and conditioning, obviously being, like, a collegiate athlete, like, that gives you, I don't want to say more buy-in, but it provides, like, more common ground, like, when you're working with athletes because you can speak language that they've been hearing and it's consistent.
No doubt. Absolutely. No doubt. And it's funny because, you know, I also don't, like, just go into it like, hey, guys, don't worry. I played softball. I know what's going on, right? Like, I kind of, right. Figure that out just through my language and through interactions, just because, you know, I'm not a walking billboard, right? And like just kind mm-hmm. of being yourself like that, but just by conversations people will know, and you may not even realize the contributions you're making, but because you went through those experiences, you have that and you have another branch to offer instead of solely just mental skills. Like, I've got a little mm-hmm. I've got background in sports science, I've got background in exercise science. Like, it's cool to kind of bring all of those to the table.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk a little bit more into the mental skills and performance side of it. So if you can, like, what exactly is your role as a mental skills coach with the Phillies?
Yeah. So like you said, my title is mental performance coach or mental skills coach. And kind of what I was talking about earlier is just it's the same thing as your coaches, except we are solely focusing on the mental aspects of your game, of your performance. And it's cool because I think one of the most rewarding parts of my job is that most of the things that I'm teaching and coaching and educating these players and staff on are helpful in life and in sport. Like, it's not just going to make you a better baseball player or a better athlete or a better performer, but it's going to make you a better human being, right? If you can learn to be more present, you're going to be a better significant other. You're going to be a better dad, a better brother, whatever your roles in life are. So that's probably the coolest part of my job. But like, yeah, I'm basically work mostly one-on-one with the athletes or the staff members and get them to realize what it is that maybe their weaknesses are and their strengths are and what we can improve on and what we can continue to pay attention to as far as the strengths go. But it's kind of all encompassing with confidence, composure, consistency, enjoyment, motivation, resiliency, you name it. Basically any, like, being clutch under pressure, being ice cold, like any of those terms is typically kind of comes down to the mental aspects of the game. And when you get to a level that's so high and physically everybody's really talented, it's a small fraction of what kind of separates you from the person next to you. And I'm mm-hmm. a firm believer that what separates you is going to be how strong you are mentally, right? We hear be mentally tough or mental strength and what is that, you know? And I think it's putting all of the things that you already know how to do, but making sure you can do them when you are under insane pressure, or the game's on the line, or maybe you're not playing really well, or maybe you are playing really well. Like, are you still able to kind of focus on the right thing at the right time? But that's basically what I do. It's mostly one-on-one work. There's group workshops too. There's small groups, big groups. But yeah, it's mostly just one-on-one conversations, working with players and coaching them up on specifically the mental aspects of their performance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the quote that you actually said that I'm really, really, like, I'm really in love with was, you know, like, how to be present. I think that's so important, especially in today's age where everything's moving at light speed. Like, you get information like at the instant your phone rings, or, you know, you get a million texts or Instagram. I feel like it's really easy to kind of lose sight of what's going on in the moment. My favorite way of, like, saying it, like, Alan Stein, he says, like, be where your feet are. Yeah. And that's always been, like, my favorite quote. Like you said, it doesn't have to be, like, in just sports. It can also be, like, significant other. Like, when I'm, you know, with my girlfriends, like, okay, like, the world has to stop. Like, I'm with, you know, Yvonne. I'm focused on her because, you know, if I'm worried about this, that, the other while I'm with Yvonne, you know, that's in the long run, that's going to affect our relationship because I'm never going to actually be mentally present. You know, I'm physically there, but I'm mentally there spiritually. So yeah, it's the same thing. You can apply that to executives. Like, you're in a meeting and you're thinking about, like, other things going on in your life, you know, which, you know, things can distract you, but that's going to take away from the performance side. And then the same thing, obviously, with athletes. So that was, like, that was one quote that you said that I really loved that. And I think is really, really, really important in terms of, like, just teaching it to even, like, younger athletes. Like, when I talk to basketball players, like, hey, look, man, like, I say next play. Look, next play, like, that's what we need to focus on. We can't do anything about what happened. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. Like, all we can do is just focus on what's going on in the moment. So I just tell them next play, like, that's what we have to focus on.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the most forgotten and easily overlooked skill that you as a human being can practice on a daily basis, right? Like, you don't have to be an athlete. And when I, like, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't need mental skills. And I'm like, if you are a performer, you need mental skills. And let me clarify what I mean by a performer, right? If you don't have to play sports, you don't even have to be physically active. You can be a parent and you are performing. If you have a job, you are performing somehow or some way. If you are in a relationship, you are performing, right? And so any performer, which is any living human being, right, can use mental skills and mental performance work and education and coaching. And I think you're absolutely right. People ask me all the time, like, what's the one thing you would tell just normal people, like, maybe not high level performers? And I'm like, I talk about the present moment because, one, being in the present moment creates awareness, right? It creates awareness around what you're actually thinking, what you're actually doing right here and right now. And that's how you grow, right? If you can't grow, if you don't know. If you don't know what you're thinking about, if you don't know why your relationship's not working, maybe you should try being in the present moment. And I bet you can figure it out very quickly why things aren't working, right? Because maybe you're not present. Maybe you're too busy worried about what's going to happen, or maybe you're stuck on something that happened in the past, right? It's the same thing in high-level performers, right? If they're too busy worrying about what's going to happen next, or the bad inning we just pitched, or the last at-bat I just had, if that's what we're thinking about, no chance we're going to be at our peak performance. And so it's absolutely being where your feet are. And let me tell you something else. Being in the present moment, practicing being in the present moment, is a mental skill. You have to actually work on it. You can't just say, oh yeah, let me be present, or like listen to this one podcast and think, oh yeah, I need to work on that. It is a consistent daily practice. And I think that is why mindfulness is such a big thing in our world right now. And like, a lot of people are like, what's the big deal with mindfulness? And mindfulness teaches you to be in the present moment. And if you can learn to be aware and in the present moment, you're like automatically going to be better at everything else that you do in life. Like, guaranteed. If you're in the present moment, you're going to be better at whatever you're doing. Like, and if that doesn't sell you, I'm not really sure what will.
All right, exactly. Like, and it's so funny that you said that. Like, I think even dealing with myself, like, there are times where I'm just really nervous when it comes to, like, speaking in front of people, which is funny because I'm a strength coach. But, you know, like, there's just times where I get in front of people and just I have the nerves and anxiety, and I'm naturally introverted. So I'm always kind of in my head. So I'm constantly, like, you know, thinking these thoughts, like, oh, like, what's this going on here? What's going on here? And it's exactly like you said. Like, I had to catch myself, you know, it was probably like about a year ago when I caught myself. And I'm like, why am I so in my head? You know, that this is affecting me when I do something because I'm so focused on not making this mistake or not doing this that, you know, it's like almost like the universe, like, I'm drawing this mistake to myself because I'm so in my head, so I can't be at my peak. Yeah. And it got to a point where I would start focusing, like, just getting out of my head. So when I catch myself now, it's like I'm in my head. I'm just okay, like focused on the task at hand, which is very small. It's probably not like anything that is like my like earth shattering, but it makes such a big difference, you know, in my life. And like you said, it's gonna make such a big difference in anybody's life. Like just being mindful about what you're thinking about. Like just sitting there thinking, like, why am I thinking about this? Is this the task at hand that I need to focus on? And if it's not, then just, you know, like you said, daily practice of clearing it. And over time, you know, that's going to make a big difference because it is a skill. So it can always sharpen the edges of that.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is even kind of taking it a step further, right? You're saying like, should I be doing this or should I be thinking about that? And that's almost step two. Step one is just, what am I thinking about right here, right now? Right? And
right.
In a non-judgmental way. Like, say you're at basketball practice, right? Like, I challenged a 10-year-old girl I was working with a couple weeks ago. I was like, look, she had soccer practice. And I was like, try three times during practice at random moments just to be like, what am I thinking about right now? Because it's not necessarily what you should or shouldn't be thinking about. It's literally just creating awareness of what are you thinking about right now? Like, are you in the middle of basketball practice counting down the seconds until you get to go home and have dinner? Or are you thinking about the test that you have tomorrow? Like, being in basketball practice, thinking about the test or whatever you have tomorrow isn't going to help you be a better basketball player, right? And it's not going to help you on that test either. And so you're kind of like lose both. So it's like, it's just asking yourself kind of constantly as much as possible, like, what am I thinking right now? Am I in this moment? And we as human beings have those moments subconsciously. Like, think about when you walk outside one day and it feels like incredible and you're just like, oh my God, like your skin just feels so good. Like, it's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's just like, and you notice it, like that is being fully aware in that moment. Right. Whereas an example of not being aware is like, say you get in the car to drive home after practice and then you get home and you're like, whoa, how did I even get home? Right. I wasn't even while I was driving home. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, you weren't even aware. Your mind, you were physically there, physically driving, but mentally, who knows where you were, right? Whether you were 4 days from now or 4 days behind or heck, maybe even further. But it's important to just like start creating, like, am I in my body right now? Like, is my mind and my body, are we connected and in sync right now? And the way you do that is just like, maybe it's taking a deep breath. Maybe it's just like figuring out your senses right now. What do you hear right now? What do you smell right now? What do you taste right now? You know, what do you see? What do you feel like? Like, do you feel the seatbelt against your chest? Like, do you feel the steering wheel in your hand? Do you see the stop signs? Are you actually reading the street signs? You know, those are little ways to help you kind of remember to like pull yourself back into that present moment.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, as you were saying, I'm thinking to myself, like, how do I bring myself back to the present moment? And it's exactly like you said, like, no, I take a deep breath or like I'll do like meditation, which is why I think that I love yoga so much, is because like we do these same exercises. Like, okay, like they tell you, like, okay, feel the air, you know, feel the or hear there's a dog barking, like pay attention to how the dog is barking, like listen to the plane overhead. Like, you're being in that present moment because you're taking in all the senses of the surrounding area and the surrounding moment. So as you were saying that, I'm thinking to myself, like, that's what I do. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's probably why it works.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of even on a podcast, right? Like, you can very easily tell on a podcast when you're talking and conversing with someone, when someone's already thinking about the next question versus like hearing you out and having a conversation with that, which is actually what produces the best podcast, right? And it's solely because that person was in the present moment instead of so worried about having a set agenda. And it's really, really, really easy, especially once you start practicing it and making it a part of who you are. It's really easy to notice who's in the present moment and who's not. And I think that is actually a huge advantage when working with a mental skills coach, is if you're working with a good mental skills coach, they're in the present moment. And sometimes just talking to someone who is in the present moment with you and hearing you and being empathetic with you is all you need. We don't even have to say anything, but listening to someone and being in that moment with someone else is so rare nowadays, right? Because like what you said earlier, like we're always going or thinking about the past. Like, we never get those in present deep moments with other people. And so if you can be that for somebody else, like, you have no idea A, how that makes them feel, and B, it might make you feel really good too. Like, instead of feeling like I have to do all of these things right, the only thing you can do is be in the freaking moment and listen, which being in the moment, you almost automatically listen better. So it's just really interesting. Like I said, like, if you can be in the present moment, if you can learn, if you can practice that and be willing and open to learning it and practicing it and being vulnerable, it's going to make you better at literally every aspect of your life. And why would we not want to do that?
Exactly. Like just that point alone to me is like you can easily stop the podcast there and just start practicing that on your own, start thinking about that and writing it down. Like, okay, this is something I want to practice for this week. So that I'm so happy that you said that because, you know, I was intrigued, like, okay, I want to dig a little deeper. And that just produced so much like valuable insight for everybody, for me too. Cause now it's like something that I know for a fact, okay, going forward, I want to practice it. And when you are in the moment, you just appreciate things more. You're like sitting there, you're like, wow, like actually I'm alive right now. You know, I'm in this position right now. I have this job or this person's in my life. It just creates a deeper appreciation because you're in the moment and you, you know, you're taking everything in for what it is and not necessarily just thinking, oh crap, I got a test tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So kind of getting more into a little bit more deeper into performance. So, it's funny because I'll get athletes that ask me questions like, hey, like, what are some, you know, do you have any like tips for like pregame, like what I should be focusing on? And I tell them, hey, look, I'm a strength conditioning coach. I have some overlap with some skills, mental performance, but I'm definitely not an expert in that area. So one thing I constantly get is, you know, just like athletes who are maybe getting into sports or maybe like they want to improve like their anxiety before games. Like, do you have any like examples of maybe exercises that you can give that maybe you'll do with like a player pregame that kind of helps them, you know, stay more focused like pregame and like kind of get rid of those jitters they may have?
Yeah. So one of the best, most easiest, simple thing to do, if you notice like you're thinking too much in the past or too much in the future or just nervous and excited all at the same time, it's you want to, right, you're trying to control your focus, right? Because your focus is on potentially the negative things going on around you or the negative things that could happen, right? Because once we start getting nervous, it's usually, what if I fail? What if we lose? What if I look mm-hmm. like an idiot? Whatever it is. And so there's actually a really cool, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's a huge chart and it's a bunch of numbers and you literally just sit down and try to find all the numbers you can in a row. And sometimes you can compete against somebody else. It's like a big graph and it's like 1 through 100 and they're all scattered. Right. And you just got to find 1 through 100 and, you know, you can mix it up by changing, like what number you start with. There's like, there's multiple different, graphs online, like you can pull it up for free and print them off, or there's even apps you can do it on your phone too. But that's just a way of like kind of refocusing yourself, kind of having a little moment of competition, because usually you love competition if you're playing sports, and just kind mm-hmm. of moment to like, okay, focus up a little bit, not focus on the negative, but just kind of, again, that almost forces you to be in the present moment too. So that's like a really good, easy, quick tip you can try. But another one I would say, especially if you're experiencing nerves, is every time you have a negative thought or a scary thought, just try to pair it with a positive thought or a real thought. Mm-hmm. So like if you're like, I'm really worried today, like I had a bad game last week or yesterday or whenever your last game was, be like, well, that was a bad game. What if this one's a good game? What if I have a really good game or I'm due this game? Or, you know, just trying to pair it. And I don't like talking a lot about being overly positive, because that can also be super damaging too. Mm-hmm. If you're unrealistically positive, right? If you're like, I'm going to go and score 50 today. And it's like, okay, your team's going to score 40 at the whole, not going to score 50, right? But like, so giving yourself like realistic positive things, right? Like, so last night's game was bad. Today, it's going to be better. I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to bring as much energy as I possibly can today. I'm going to try to get 5 assists today. I'm going to try to get, you know, something that's a little bit more realistic, but still positive, is what I typically try to tell athletes, especially like right before a game when they're just really nervous and going through some stuff. And if they're seeing themselves performing poorly, try seeing yourself performing well, right? And then again, mm-hmm. not like freaking LeBron James, right? Or Kobe, whoever the person is, or MJ, but it's like actually just seeing yourself being the best version of you. That's some easy, quick tricks I would challenge people to do. Like if people like, I can't see myself doing something well, I don't typically believe them. I don't think they're trying hard enough, because if you can see yourself doing something poorly, you can see yourself doing something well. Absolutely. So it's kind of challenging people to do that too. If you can come up with something bad, which most of us can, then you can come up with something good.
Right. No, I love the fact like that you even brought up, which is interesting to me, is like, just being overly positive, which I've heard that before. I've never really like dove too deep into it, but just kind of like something that's kind of been twirling in my mind was, since you said it, was, you know, if someone is overly positive and, you know, like, oh, like you said, like, I'm going to get 50 and the team's going to score 45, is like, you know, you have these like unrealistic expectations that, you know, players want to shoot for. And if they don't meet those expectations, do you feel like that's something that could possibly hinder that confidence going forward because they set unrealistic expectations and now like they didn't even get even close to that? Now all of a sudden, like, their confidence is just completely gone.
Yep, absolutely. That's exactly why you don't want to do those things, right? It's like, we're never telling hitters to go up and think you're going to hit a home run every at bat, because mm-hmm. we know for a fact that that's not going to happen. Absolutely. If you set those unrealistically high goals of, I'm going to score 50, like, eventually, like, someone maybe listening to this and be like, no, it's actually possible for me to score 50. Great. Good for you. Then say 100. Right? Like, know what the point of it is, but absolutely. The reason why you don't want to do that is because then the feeling of defeat, the feeling of not being perfect, right? So that perfectionist mindset is a big thing, comes back into play and can potentially have more negative effects than if you actually were talking negatively about yourself going into the game, because then you're never going to be good enough. You're never going to be satisfied. Like, it's just never going to be enough. And that's the danger of perfectionistic mindset, is you think you're supposed to be perfect every time and have the best game of your life every single game. I ask this question a lot. Let's say you play 10 games, okay? Of those 10 games, how many are the best game of your life?
I mean, if it's 10 games, maybe one.
Right, exactly. Week. Maybe one. Maybe not even one. Maybe, we don't know. Maybe not. So not even one of those 10 games. Maybe one, okay? And of those same 10 games, how many are the worst game you've ever played in your entire life?
Say maybe one, maybe zero.
Probably zero, maybe one. So what are the rest?
Just average, yeah. In between.
Yeah, they're just the solid games, right? They're just like, they're not horrible, they're not great, but they're just there. And so chances are you're gonna have a solid game tonight, okay? It's probably not gonna be your best. It might be, and it's probably not gonna be your worst. So it's kind of giving that perspective too, and like, that sometimes can calm down nerves, just like going in there being like, you're right, it's probably not gonna be my worst game, and it might not be my best game. Who knows? I may go out there and all of a sudden we're feeling it, we're in the zone, and it doesn't end up to be our best game. Awesome, right? But mm-hmm. and then we can kind of dissect, why did we think that happened mentally, physically, did you do anything differently, you know, X, Y, and Z. But I think that's a lot of the times, like, we're thinking like, tonight's gonna be the best game of my life, and it's like, realistically, it probably isn't gonna be. It might be, but we're not gonna know that till after. So why are we even, why is that even a thought in our head, right? That's not a very productive thought in order to produce the best performance. Don't get me wrong. Like, I want you to hype yourself up, do whatever you have to do. And also remember, with the hyping up, like, what hypes you up may not hype somebody else up. Right. So if somebody, like, there's going to be the loud guy, the loud girl in the locker room, hooping and hollering and joking around and hitting people with the towel. And that's fine. And then there's going to be the silent killer too, in the same locker room. And they're going to be listening to Mozart or some, whatever they want to listen to on the iPod, and that's going to fire them up, and that's okay. Don't think just because you're not loud and flamboyant, or just because you're super silent, doesn't mean you're not going to have a good game. You have to figure out what your level of hype is. Okay, so think back to a game when you did play really well. What did you do before that game? What level of hype were you at? And try to reproduce that without thinking like, this has to be the best game of my life, or this can't be the worst game in my life, right? It's like, that's the extreme thinking, when the reality of it is probably just going to be another solid game.
No, honestly, like, that's crazy that you said that, because it's like, you literally just spoke to me in high school and coming through college. It was just like, I was always trying to be a perfectionist. And I think we stick a label like of being a perfectionist or a perfectionist, like, the gold standard, or, you know, like, what we have to do. Is like, at the end of the day, like you said, you might have the best game of your life. You might have the worst game of your life, but chances are it's just going to be solid, which is fine. And I think, like, just kind of looking back on myself, like, I know personally, like, I just loved calling myself a perfectionist, but it did hurt me performance-wise, because it's like, I'm in my head, because I'm like, all right, this has to be perfect. And then inevitably, when it isn't perfect, now I'm like, okay, I'm in my head trying to figure out what's going on. Like, why am I not performing? And then it's like we talked about earlier, now I'm not being present, because I'm thinking about all these other things and that's even hurting my performance, which is like it turns into a vicious cycle. So it's crazy that you said that, because now I'm like self-reflecting, like, wow, like that's why these things happen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the cycle is exactly what it is. Like, you have that thought, then that thought creates this, then you keep going, right? Your thoughts, I think it's your thoughts create, or your feelings create your thoughts, and then your thoughts create your feelings create your actions. Right. And then those actions create more thoughts. And so everything really does start with a thought. And if you're, whether it's the perfectionistic mindset, whether it's a super negative thought or the super positive thought or the futuristic thought or the past thought, right? All of those, which we think it's such a simple concept, but it's really, that's really challenging to find a present mindset, right? That's objectively optimistic, right? Not super, super optimistic, but not pessimistic in any way. Like, that's really, really hard. And the hardest part is your version of that is different than my version of that. And that's the hard part of mental skills. There's no do this and you will be the most confident athlete in the entire world, right? It doesn't work, because we're human beings and we're all different, and different people need different things and different ways to be motivated. And you may play better when you're really happy. And when a coach would yell at me, I would play better, right? I play better when I was mad. And some players break down when they get yelled at, and that's fine. It doesn't matter. But what matters is that you know how you react and what you need to hear and what you need to do in order to perform well, which goes back to the whole awareness piece of, like, if you don't know what mood you're supposed to be in, if you don't know what song you're supposed to listen to before the game to get you hype, if you don't know what you're supposed to eat, like, then how are you producing optimal performance? And that's part of the athlete journey of growing and continuing to get better and to figure out who they are. And again, like, once you figure out all of those things, you're probably figuring out who you are as a person along the way too, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's so crazy. Like you said, like, everyone's different. Same thing with strength conditioning. Like, everyone needs different things, like athletes. And then even, like, just general population, like, when they're training, like, they may have different, you know, goals and things like that, body types, you know, whatever the case may be, age, like, that all plays a factor into getting them to their goals that they want. And like you said, like, everyone can't do the same thing because everyone is so different. So it has to be, you know, specific to that individual. So I love that. Yeah. One thing I did want to touch on a little bit, we talked about it a little bit, but, you know, that resiliency and that bounce back. So, you know, kind of piggybacking off of kind of my own thoughts and, like, my own experiences and things that I know, you know, other people are kind of going through, is like, when an athlete or even an individual, like, has a bad game or a bad day at work, like, that presentation didn't go well, you know, what are some exercises that an individual can do to kind of bounce back and say, all right, tomorrow, you know, we're going to make this better, versus staying in their head and just kind of, like, dwelling on it?
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind is, it's similar to the negative and positive thought, but what I would challenge them to do is write down the negative things that they think is going on. Write down why they thought they had a bad performance. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's 2 or 3 things. Maybe it's 9 or 10 things. And then I want them to try to challenge them to find however many negative things they came up with, find just as many positive things that they did that day too. Because sometimes when we have a bad game, we're so consumed in, like, for example, in baseball, like, if a guy goes 3 for 4, which means 3 of the 4 at-bats he had, he got a hit. What at bat do you think he's worried about?
The one where he didn't hit.
Yep. The one he didn't hit. And I'm like, we're not even focusing on the other 3 that you did well, right? Because we are athletes and we always are noticing how we can get better, what needs improvement. And so for some people, it's going to be really, really easy to come up with the things they did well. And for some people, it's going to be incredibly challenging to come up with those, because they're only, like, their brain only works to notice the bad, to notice how they can improve and how they can get better in areas of improvement. And so that's the first thing I would do, is I would say, all right, write down the 3 things that are irritating the heck out of you from last night's performance or yesterday's practice. What has got you so angry? And then I want you to write 3 things that you actually did well in the performance, because I bet there's 3 things you did well too in that performance, but you're just not seeing that because you're too busy worried about these 3 things. And then after you've done that, go back to those 3 things that you're pissed off about or mad about, and figure out if those are things that you can actually can control, or if you can't control them. Because chances are, most of them are things that potentially are outside of your control. So if you actually think about the game of baseball or basketball or whatever your sport is or performance is, and you think about all the things that are actually outside of your control, you'll probably be shocked at how many things are actually completely outside of your control. We think we can control so much, but the reality of it is there's really barely anything you can control in these high level sports.
That's crazy. Cause it's like, you know, just thinking about, you know, myself and then like just kind of people that are around me and hearing them speak, it's exactly the same thing. And I think, especially with certain athletes, like you said, like everyone's different, but you know, I looked up to Kobe Bryant a lot. You know, I loved Kobe Bryant. That was one of my favorite players ever. And, you know, like he would basically hear these stories about like, oh, Kobe like scored 81 or whatever. Like Kobe, like, you know, hit this many shots. And it's like, oh, he's in the gym. And it's like, because I missed 5 shots. And I think that kind of created mentally, for at least for me, like, okay, like even if you do good, which is the perfectionist mindset, even if you do well, it's like, it can always be better. And it's like, when we do have these, I guess, poor performances, like we're so used to just focusing on the negative that when we have a poor performance, now it's like amplified. It's like, okay, like, holy crap, like I really messed up. Like, how do I fix this? And it's like you said, like oftentimes there are good things that we've done, but we're so focused on, like, we're hyper focused on the negatives that we can't even pull ourselves out and say, okay, I did this well, this well, this well. Like, okay, I took something positive from this. Now how can I learn from the mistakes? And it's crazy. Like, it's like almost like you're, like, I can see why you work with the Phillies, but you're opening my mind up to so many things that I could possibly have done, like, in my career. And I know, like, there are probably things that people are going on, like, they're feeling the same exact way.
Absolutely. No. And I think there's nothing wrong with that Kobe mindset, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that, but there is something wrong with a perfectionistic mindset, because mm-hmm. it's like, it's just like, what are you actually chasing? You know, like, you're constantly looking for something that you're never going to be satisfied from. And so that's mm-hmm. potentially where it gets a little dangerous. And so it's maybe set some realistic goals of you should do the same thing after every single game. Like, you should review after every game, from a good game to a bad game. Because also, if you're spending time in the gym after a bad game, what are you learning from your good games?
Right.
So, like, you had a good game today. Sweet. Let's go celebrate. Did you even think for a second why you had a good game? Did you think for a second how to replicate that? Right? Like, we always notice, like, I worked with the FDNY a lot, and that's the New York Fire Department. And one of the things that they really were working on is, you know, when something went wrong in a fire, they dissected everything, right? Like, because it's like, it's life or death situation, right? But when something went well, they were like, good job, boys. Chalk it up as a win, right? What are we actually learning from that? What are we doing? Like, that's huge points that people are missing too. And so I think a way to kind of delegate that and keep a balance is to make sure that you're reviewing games the same way, win or loss, great performance, worst performance, solid performance. Like, let's still try to evaluate the same way. That way you're creating these habits and, you know, not panicking or not having that perfectionistic mindset. But I think evaluating the good is something that's commonly overlooked as well.
Wow. That's definitely a great point. It's like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, we won 3 in a row. Let's, like, or we won a game tonight. Let's go celebrate with a couple beers. And it's like, oh man, we really got blown out. Like, okay, what's going on? Like, we're going to stay after practice. We're going to have film session. It's exactly like you said. Like, how do we replicate the successes? Like, if we're trying not to replicate the failures, like, okay, let's focus on replicating the successes. I mean, like you said, it goes both ways. And I think that's a great point. Wow. All right, so when it comes to, obviously, like, this is kind of pretty much put to bed, but I kind of want to touch on this a little bit. Obviously, like, we've had people, like, the debate, especially when it comes to, like, MJ and LeBron, like, the clutch gene, right? So, like, obviously, like, there's no gene that's going to help you be more clutch than another player. But what are some things that, you know, an athlete, or even, I guess, specifically for athletes, that can help them stay composed under, like, intense amount of pressure, like, whether it's like game 7 or maybe it's, you know, the last inning? Like, what are some things that kind of help athletes, or should athletes be aware of to help them stay composed under this, like, such intense pressure?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think it kind of comes down to mental toughness, right? And if you ask 10 different people what is mental toughness, you'll probably get 10 different answers. But chances are, those 10 answers will kind of all come down to the same thing. And that's being able to focus on the right thing at the right time. That's my definition of mental toughness. And you think about it, when the game's on the line, right, and the ball's in your hand, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking about the routine play? Are you thinking about the routine three-pointer, the routine layup, the routine pass, whatever you're supposed to be doing? Or are you thinking, oh, God, I got to make this. The game's on the line, right? It's all of a sudden, your focus completely different. And I think that's the biggest challenge is, regardless of if you've had a really good game, a really bad game, or it's the game on the line, right? If you are able to stay mentally tough, and by that I mean if you are able to focus on what you know you should be focusing on, chances are you will put yourself in a chance to be more successful more times than if you lost that focus, right? And that's disclaimer, right? That's not guaranteeing that you're going to be clutch every time, because you're not. Just like routine layup. Sometimes we miss a routine layup, right? Sometimes you're going to miss the last second shot. But what it does guarantee is that it's giving you a better chance to be successful with that last second shot than if you were thinking about something you shouldn't be thinking about, or throwing that focus off. So what I typically talk about is just, were you focusing on the right thing at the right time in the right moment, right? And that's, were you sticking to what you should have been thinking about if it was the first play of the game? Did you have the same mindset as if it was the first play of the game? Were you too busy worried about the clock? Were you too busy worried about what the newspapers, what Twitter was going to say about you, whatever it is? Like, what were you thinking about? And if you're able to keep that focus on what you know you should be focusing on, then you should be all right, or at least you're going to give yourself every opportunity from a mental perspective to be successful in that situation. So that's what I would say is, what are you focusing on? Are you focusing on the right things? Are you focusing on the wrong things?
Right. Oh, I love the fact that you said, you know, that just that simple example, like, are you treating this play, the last play, the same as you treated the first play, right? Are you still focused on, you know, what you need to accomplish? And it's, for me, looking at that, it's like, you know, athletes will, their focus will waver throughout the game. And I think that maybe, like, I want you to kind of touch on that too, is it because, like, they're not practicing the skill of remaining focused throughout the entirety of a competition and practice and things like that? So when they get in the game, like, that focus wavers. So when it comes time for that last second play, like, they can't make it because, like, they weren't consistent?
Potentially, you know, I think that's one way to look at it. And I think you should be practicing for those high pressure situations, right? So you can try to replicate that, and maybe even the coach says, hey, stop, what were you thinking about then? Well, I was thinking I had to make it to win. Nope, that's not what you should be thinking about, right? Try it and think this. But also, I think it's important to know that you should be able to turn your focus on and off like a light switch. Okay, and it's a little different with basketball, right? Because in baseball, you have a lot of downtime. A baseball game's 3+ hours. And if you're focused, like self-focused mode the whole time, you're going to be dead by the end of it, right? There's no way you're going to be mentally exhausted. So it's important to know when you need to lock it in and when you can relax. So on any timeouts, on water breaks, on when you're subbed in for it, right? Any of those times you can take advantage to kind of turn off a little bit, right? Still stay in tune, still watch the game, but maybe the focus goes off and then all of a sudden you can turn it back on. Like as you're going in to check in to get back into the game or whatever it is. I do think that's important too. I think you can practice that too. I think you can practice turning focus on and turning focus off. Like, maybe you play some silly game where you're not having to focus, and then all of a sudden you go one-on-one. Let's go. You got to focus, right? Like, you got to turn it on or you're going to get beat. And just practicing kind of putting that into different situations. But I absolutely think that focus can be trained and worked on, and you can definitely get better at focusing through practice.
Right. Absolutely. No, I really like that. I like the fact that, you know, even like we talked about earlier, like, it's specific to the individual, the sport, the environment, the situation. So, no, absolutely. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Transitioning a little bit from not necessarily performance, but kind of more into, like, you know, I saw a post with you about, you know, social media, and people that have been listening, they know for a fact, like, I'm always talking about it. Like, hey, like, you know, I think that's really affected us, you know, as far as focusing, like we said, like I read Deep Work by Cal Newport, and I love that book, and he's really big on, like, just basically just getting rid of social media. But, you know, in your post, like, I think it was on LinkedIn, it might have been on Instagram, I'm not sure, but, you know, you talked about, like, unplugging for, you know, your own, you know, mental health. So kind of like, you know, your own opinion, obviously, you know, why did you feel like it was important for yourself to unplug from social media for like a little time period? And why do you think other people could possibly benefit from unplugging from social media?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we've been talking about almost this whole time, right? Is being in the present moment. Like when you're on social media, there's no chance you're in the present moment. Like you're constantly comparing. You're thinking, what if, well, what about this? What about that? I could do this. I could be doing that. I should look like this. I should be doing that. Whatever it is, your chances are you're not in the present moment. And I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I love it. I think it's great, but I also think it can really consume a large part of your life. And if it's consuming too much of your life, then I think that's kind of when it becomes the dangerous part. And when we're spending too much time fantasizing about what life should be versus actually living our life, I think that's when the red flag should come up. And I think that's when it's important to just unplug when we need to unplug. And it's, whether it's, you know, an hour a day, whether you take a whole day, whether you take a whole week or a month or a year, heck, whatever you're able to do, I think as much as you can get away, and it may be uncomfortable, but I think that's because sometimes we're uncomfortable being in the present moment. I think sometimes people are uncomfortable, like, knowing what's actually happening in their lives, right? Whether it's bad or scary or overwhelming or stressful, whatever it is, like, but it's important to face that, and I think it's important to stay true to the life you're living instead of, you know, fantasize of what life could be or should be or what it could, shoulda, woulda, coulda, right? I know it's hard for me just because I want to provide help for everybody in mental performance. But at the same time, I know, like, this whole past year, like, I was working really hard on getting content out, and it was taking a lot of time and effort and energy. And I was like, this is not the best thing for me right now. So it was like, okay, going to unplug, and I'm going to challenge everybody else to unplug, and don't be mad at me for unplugging, you know, because that was actually a thought. Like, if I unplug, and I still got messages, like, people were like, where are you at? Where's Mental Sweat Monday? And I'm like, and it's great. Like, I love it. I love the support, and I want people to say that, but I also want to be and felt supported. But it's kind of like also not caring about what other people think and doing what's best for you, because nobody knows what's best for me. Like I said, like, for somebody, being on social media may be their help, their outlet. And for me, it's getting off of it, and it's unplugging, and spending time with my family, and we got a new puppy, and spending time with her, and we're moving, and so it's, like, getting ready for the move, and all of that stuff is, like, super important, too. So, again, to each their own, but I would absolutely challenge anybody who's on social media on a daily basis to try and unplug at least a little bit, and just see the changes that it makes, and if it impacts your life in any way, shape, or form. I bet it will.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you say that, because, you know, which we'll segue into a little bit, but, like, you know, that's actually how I found you, just, like, through the content you provide through social media. So it can be, you know, obviously, like, a positive, like you said, you're helping people and trying to, like, give insight that they may not get through, you know, elsewhere, especially from a professional at your level. But at the same time, it's like you said, you can't pour from an empty cup. So mentally, it's just draining you, and you're just like, man, I don't know if I can do this.
Right.
Like, eventually, like, you know, that's gonna spill over into, you know, what you're providing for the people that are following you. So, no, I definitely think it's very important to unplug, because it's the same thing with me, like, on Instagram, and I'm trying a little bit on LinkedIn, but just providing, like, information. And, you know, it's funny because my girlfriend, like, she's the one that kind of, like, open my eyes to it, like, hey, you know, you spend a lot of time on social media, like, you should probably, like, take a break.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, and it goes back to being present with her, is, like, I realize if I do spend X amount of time on social media and I'm doing this, like, you know, how can I cut this back? Like, how can I be a little bit more strategic when I do use it versus just, like, scrolling my life away? And I definitely, like, agree. Like, over the holidays, like, I just basically turned my phone off, didn't get on it, and it just felt so refreshing to kind of, like, you know, notice the air, like, when it was actually damp, and, you know, walking outside, like, wow, like, I didn't never notice that house look like that when I'm walking. And normally I just, like, you know, I'm just, like, focused on the music I'm playing, and it's just like, wow, like, it does something for your awareness. And I totally agree, like you said, to each his own, but I think at least trying it out, just, you know, getting quote unquote uncomfortable, like, I think, like you said, it can absolutely change, like, your perspective on how you use your phone and social media and everything like that.
I totally agree. 100%. Give it a try. Everybody should.
All right, cool. So that was actually a good segue. So what, you know, I talked about like finding you through LinkedIn and like the content you produce. So for anyone that doesn't know, like Hannah actually does something what's called Mental Sweat Monday, which I'm not going to go into it because I want her to explain it, but she does it on Instagram. She does it on LinkedIn. So if you can like kind of talk a little bit about Mental Sweat Monday, you know, what it is, like why you do it and kind of like how did it come about?
Yeah. So Mental Sweat Monday, it's a 1 minute video. And it's on both, like I said, it's on LinkedIn and Instagram and Twitter, actually. But it's, I started about a year ago, literally at the beginning of 2019. And it was just, you know, as a mental performance coach, I think there was a lot of misconceptions about what are mental skills and mental performance. And I was like, you know, I think it's really cool if I could kind of get it out there a little bit more about what exactly I do and what little skills and tips and reminders people in everyday life could use, not just high-level performers, but again, all performers, all human beings. And so I just kind of started it, and Mental Sweat Monday, kind of the name came from how do I introduce this to people? And, you know, social media is huge on physical sweating, right? Like every time you turn
right.
on, working out or yoga or walking or Peloton or whatever, you know, you name it. The coolest shins and CrossFit and all that good stuff. And it's so everybody knows the importance of the physical sweat that we should be making in order to be as healthy as possible. But I think what really gets overlooked is the mental sweat. And so that's kind of where the mental sweat came in. And the goal is to remind people to break a mental sweat, you know, on a daily basis. Obviously, the videos are only once a week, but it's kind of supposed to serve as a reminder of the week of like, hey, try this. Make sure you're not only you're working hard physically, but are you taking care of yourself mentally? And just, it's honestly supposed to just serve as a little reminder. And then the little tip or trick to try is, it's supposed to kind of guide a little bit. It's more of a reminder, more of a prodding point of like, okay, mm-hmm. Hey, here's a thought, go try this, go see what kind of variety of this would work for you in your life and your situation and whatever it is that you're doing. But it's really cool. I did it for about a year, and like I said, taking a little unplug right now, but planning on getting right back at it in a couple weeks and kind of continuing that journey. But it's been really cool just to see what's come from it and how people, like, everybody needs it, you know? And they're like, everybody knows that we're spending so much time on the physical aspect, but we're spending zero time on the mental aspects. And I think that's the goal for me, was just to create that awareness on how we can get better and take care of ourselves mentally and not just physically. So that was the main goal of that, for sure.
Right. No, absolutely. And it's crazy. Like the thing I like the most about it is that you do it once a week. So even though it's not like a daily thing, like how most social media like platforms, which is not wrong if they do it, but it's like, oh, constant content. It's like, no, like here's what you need to focus on this week, because yep. You know, like you said, there's skills. So if you're constantly like trying a thousand different things, like you're not going to get, you know, any better at any of them. So just give them some, hey, like this week, this is what we need to focus on. Now you've got 7 days to focus on that before you get the next skill. And it's almost like, you know, basically homework. And no, I love that. Like just kind of looking at it, and I realized, I'm like, oh, okay, these are weekly. And I just thought to myself, like, okay, wow. Like that's, in my opinion, a lot better than just kind of going the quantity route, you know, in your opinion, it's kind of like, or in your instance, it's kind of like quality, you know, quality over quantity, which I love. Absolutely. And no, I just thought that was amazing, because like I think the one I saw that actually drew me to you was the one about the bloopers. I think that's the one I saw first. And it's like, it was just funny because I was like, oh, she put the bloopers out, and like I didn't know what it was at first. And I'm like, okay, and I went on your page, I'm like, oh, okay, wow, like she did this every week. And I love that. I love the fact that you put that out there and helping people. So I wanted to give you a chance to kind of like put that out there, even though you're taking an unplug, for people to at least go back and you know, check out the past past videos. So if you're checking out weekly, it should take you, you know, about a year to get through them, and then you got another year you can get through them again for the new ones.
Yep. No, it's awesome. I love it. I'm glad you tuned in. Yeah, the bloopers one, it's funny, that was one of the ones that was the most loved, and I thought that was hilarious, just because I think people are literally looking for that authenticity, like even if it's just a funny video of me looking silly and messing up, like people love that. And that's what I really try to do, is just try to incorporate the realness of life into these videos, not just life of high level performers, but life of
all types of performers, and that was the goal. Yeah, so it's turned out pretty good. I hope we have another solid year this year, year two of Mental Sweat Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year, I'm actually going through them now. But no, it's definitely like, I think it's already like kind of opened my eyes to a couple things. But no, I definitely agree with the authenticity. Is even like when I edit the podcast, like sometimes I'm like, oh, that was a stupid question to ask. And I think to myself, like, do I want to take that out? And I just kind of think like, no, I don't want to take it out, because I want people to understand that even when I do ask, you know, questions that may not be the most specific, or like, you know, it may not be a great question, you know, it's the authenticity. Like, yo, I do make mistakes. Like, I'm not perfect, even though, like, you know, I like to edit around, like, in social media, like, wants everything perfect. Like, I try to keep as much authenticity in it as possible, because, like you said, I think people relate to that more so than, like, a perfect picture with the perfect angle. It's like, okay, come on, like, that's not realistic.
Right.
Versus, like, oh, okay, like, you got this guy running a podcast. Oh, okay, he's making mistakes. And to me, that inspires people to not only, like, tune in, but also inspires them to maybe do whatever it is they want to do. Like, oh, he makes mistakes or she makes mistakes. Cool. Like, it's okay if I go out and make mistakes.
Right, especially living in this world of everyone has to be perfect right now. And like you said, social media, like, that's what that creates. And so I think that authenticity and that realness is pretty big time. And I think people love that. And I think people are yearning for it, just like people are yearning for people to be in the present moment. People are yearning for that realness. So it was cool to see all the reactions to the bloopers.
Yeah, absolutely. So one more question. I'm going to let you get out of here. You gave an hour of just amazing content, so thank you so much for that. Okay. But this one is a question I love asking just anyone that comes on. If you could give yourself any advice 3 to 4 years ago, what would that be, and what would that change anything?
I would say the advice I would give myself would be to lighten the heck up. I was always like super, super, super hard on myself. And kind of like what you were saying, like, had the highest of expectations and the perfectionistic mindset of I have to be the best at everything I do. And the reality of it is you don't. And like you said, like, the whole lessons of learning from failure and pushing yourself, and, you know, if being perfect means you're not going to challenge yourself as much because you're afraid of failure, then you're not growing. And so I think the first one would be to lighten the heck up. And then the second part of that would be to be my own source of confidence. Because I spent a lot of my youth looking for other people's confidence in myself. And when the reality of it is, the best confidence comes from within. And once I started realizing that I am worthy and I am good at my job and I am good at sports and X, Y, and Z, like, the rest kind of just fell into place. And so it's not arrogance. It's just making sure you're looking for, like, the confidence that all of us search for and yearn for and look for from all those outside sources, whether it's social media or a coach or a parent or a significant other. It has to come from you first, right?
Right.
There's like a saying that's like, you can't make an unhappy person happy until they are happy. Like, they have to find their own source of happiness. It's the same with confidence. Like, nobody can make you confident if you can't make you confident.
I love that.
Yeah.
No, I love that. It's almost like, you know, just saying, like, it has to be intrinsic, because, like, obviously there's going to be extrinsic motivators. There's going to be people saying, oh, you can do this, you can do this. Oh, yeah, you're very good. But internally, like, if you don't believe that, it doesn't matter, because there's only so much that the external, you know, validation or, like, you know, confidence boosters can do for you, because, like, you have to light that fire within yourself. So, no, I love that. And I think that's something that I can actually kind of learn from right now. You know, just turned 26, and I'm like kind of like looking in the mirror and saying, you know, what are some things that I can take away, and, you know, to kind of help make this year even a better year than last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of them, is just to lighten up. Like, don't take obviously, like, you know, do what you need to do to be a professional, but also, like, don't take life too seriously, because 100%. We only get one opportunity.
100%. And eventually you're going to look back and be like, dang, like, what did I enjoy? Like, hopefully I enjoy this journey, right? And I think that's a really big part of it, no doubt.
All right, absolutely. So, Hannah, I'm going to let you get out of here, but I want people to be able to find you before you go. So you kind of touched on it a little bit, but, you know, where can people find you on social media if they want to reach out to you? Obviously, you're unplugged, but whenever you do come back, how can people find you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, so my... I'm most active on Instagram, and it's just my first and last name. So it's just Hannah Huseman, no spaces or periods or underscores or anything like that. And then LinkedIn is just my name. And Twitter, I think, is Hannah.Huseman. So check it out. It's done pretty easy to find.
Right. It helps when you got like a unique, pretty unique last name. I just typed in Hannah Huseman. It's like you popped up. I'm like, oh, okay. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, and a couple of girls from England. So I'm not from England. So don't. That's about it.
Gotcha. Well, I'll make sure I'll include all the social media handles in there in the show notes. But Hannah, thank you so much for coming on. Like you gave, I mean, this is easily like top three of my most favorite podcasts because you just gave so much like, you know, great value, but something that people can apply immediately. And I think that's really important is to not only give information, but give information that people can use.
Good. Well, I am glad and I am pumped to hear it go live. Make sure you send it to me before it goes live.
I got you. Well, Hannah, I'm going to let you go. I've talked your ear off for over an hour, but thank you again for stopping by and look forward to having this episode drop.
Yeah, Xavier, thanks for everything, and I look forward to having it drop, too. I'll definitely share it.
Awesome. You have a good day, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune in to the next episode.